North Korea comes out and says, well, there's no violence. There's no history of violence in North Korea, no widespread sexual abuses taking place against women. Human Rights Watch, with their reporting, says that simply is not the case.
Old allegations resurface anew of sexual violence in North Korea. It's Friday, November 2nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also coming up this half hour, the U.S. midterm elections, less than a week away. And are we really alone in this vast universe? That and more, all on today's VOA Asia. Human Rights Watch is calling for immediate action to stop what it says is widespread sexual abuse in North Korea. In an 86-page report, the group says its three-year study of the issue has found that abuse against women is so common it has come to be accepted as part of ordinary life in North Korea. The Human Rights Watch report follows a July 2018 white paper on North Korean human rights published by the Korean Institute for National Unification. That white paper reported that, quote, women are easily exposed to domestic violence, gender-based exploitation and violence in society, and the social conditions where women can be protected from such violence or seek relief were found to be lacking. VOA's Steve Miller in Seoul, South Korea, spoke with our Kim Lewis about this report.
Human Rights Watch conducted an extensive three-year study, what they call, as far as they are concerned, one of the most expansive study on sexual violence against women in North Korea. And what they say is that the problem is really so pervasive that a lot of women in North Korea view sexual assault and the ordeals that they have to go through as routine, a fact of everyday life. And Human Rights Watch says that those that perpetrate violence against women come from all walks of life within the North Korean side of things, whether they be soldiers or policemen or guards. It's not just party officials that are conducting these alleged atrocities.
Is the government acknowledging that this is happening?
Well, the North Korean government says that there is no problem of sexual violence in North Korea. And Human Rights Watch says that the reason for that is that because women face such obstacles in reporting violence, that even though in North Korea there are criminal codes on the books against rape and different sexual violence acts against women, because they face so much fear of retribution that they simply don't report it. And since there are no crime stats, North Korea comes out and says, well, there's no violence. There's no history of violence in North Korea, no widespread sexual abuses taking place against women. Human Rights Watch, with their reporting, says that simply is not the case.
And so what does Human Rights Watch, what do they want the international community to do?
Well, they really want this issue brought forward and hopefully with greater discourse, let North Korea know that in terms of addressing this issue, what Kenneth Roth says, he's executive director of Human Rights Watch, this is something, in his opinion, that Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea, could fix, quote-unquote, tomorrow, because this isn't an issue that would take away his grasp of power in North Korea. It simply would, you know, improve the lives of women in North Korea if he enforced the laws on the books, if he took the problem seriously and made concrete changes to address the issues that have created the system in North Korea.
So at this point, is there any way a woman can feel empowered to come forward to let people know that this is what's going on, this is what's happening to her, she's being sexually harassed in her country in North Korea?
According to the research that was published, there's really very little that women in North Korea can do. There are researchers spoke to over 50 people who had left North Korea about their experiences. And these are people who had left North Korea after 2011. Now, this is after when Kim Jong-un came to power. So these are all fairly recent defectors and refugees that they spoke to. And they told horrific stories about they would be put in these detention holding cells. And there's one story that really sticks out in the report about how this woman would hear this clicking sound. And that's the sound of the locks being turned over in the detention cell. And then they'd have to wait to see if a guard would come to them. And if that happened, they would have no choice but to go with that guard and then, you know, unfortunately be assaulted. So there's really no recourse for them while they're in North Korea because of the fear of retribution.
VOA correspondent Steve Miller in Seoul, South Korea. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. A U.S. grand jury indicted a Chinese state-owned company and a Taiwanese tech firm on charges of stealing trade secrets from the U.S. Pakistan's Supreme Court overturned the conviction of a Christian woman on a charge of committing blasphemy. The first democratically elected president of the Maldives returned home Thursday after more than 2 years in exile to escape a prison term. Sri Lanka's president has summoned parliament to meet next week as pressure grows to resolve the turmoil set off when he sacked his cabinet. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com. And VOA Asia continues. South Korean President Moon Jae-in told the National Assembly Thursday that he expects North Korean leader Kim Jong-un to visit Seoul very soon. He reaffirmed his belief the two Koreas and the U.S. will achieve complete denuclearization and lasting peace on the peninsula. He spoke of a second U.S.-North Korean summit, visits to the North by Russian and Chinese leaders, and there is an open possibility of a North Korea-Japan meeting. Following their summit in Pyongyang in September, Mr. Moon said that the North Korean leader's visit to Seoul will take place soon. The South Korean news agency Yonhap, citing a South Korean lawmaker, said North Korea is preparing for international inspectors at several of its missile and nuclear sites. The report comes as U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said he plans to meet his North Korean counterpart next week and would discuss inspections. State Department spokesperson Robert Paladino said Wednesday inspections for final, fully verified denuclearization go hand in hand. Pompeo in Pyongyang last month said Kim Jong-un committed himself to allowing U.N. inspectors at two significant sites. RAND Corporation senior defense analyst Bruce Bennett told VOA's Victor Beatty the North will want inspectors only at known facilities.
The problem we have with North Korea is that North Korea has a large number, probably as many covert facilities as it has known facilities. And the ones the United States is likely going to want to see are the covert facilities more than the overt ones. But certainly being able to see the ones we know about now would be helpful, because then we would know more of the details of what's going on, their capacities, and that sort of thing. So starting with existing known facilities, a good thing, but establishing a procedure to identify the other facilities would also be important.
The South Korean lawmaker that is cited in the Yonhap report said there are no major movements seen at the Yongbyon main nuclear complex.
That's not necessarily surprising. I mean, if the North Koreans are planning to have the United States go in and tear it apart and try to make it safe for the world, then they may not be worried about trying to establish procedures for inspections, whereas at other places they may be trying to prepare the facilities so that they don't show us more than they want to.
Now, who would these international inspectors potentially be?
The first possibility would be the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA. That's the international organization that does many of these kinds of things. For example, doing the enforcement on the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. So they're the most likely group.
What would they be observing, do you think?
Well, the kinds of things that they would be observing to start with would be that if North Korea is really going to denuclearize, they would not only want to see the facilities, they would want to go in and put in place monitoring devices to confirm that no further production goes on. So this is more than just an initial inspection that they would presumably want to be doing. you know, if Kim Jong-un is really going to give up all of his nuclear weapons during President Trump's first term, as he said a month ago, he's not going to be producing any more. He's wasting his money. So this would be a matter of verification of a lack of production.
Bruce, as you know, this has been a key U.S. demand, inspections, but also an inventory. Do you expect North Korea to provide that?
I think at this stage they're working on it, but if we get 100 boxes of paper or something like that, that's not going to be terribly helpful to the United States. My perspective has been that there are several types of facilities, four or five, that are absolutely key to the nuclear production and then others for ballistic missile production. I'd like to start with just a short list, one page or a half page, that gives me the 8 to 10 critical facilities for production. We could tell North Korea what we want to know and which ones we think they are. If they would give us the locations and capacities and function of the facilities, I think that would be a great first step.
Following their 50th annual security consultative meeting in Washington, U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis and his South Korean counterpart discussed future joint military exercises. A decision about resuming them next year is expected in December. Happening now in Asia, shares in Asia were mainly higher in the first day of trading in November. The Shanghai Composite advanced 0.13% to close at about 2606.24, while Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index traded 1.22% higher in afternoon action. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. And we're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Shamsia Hassani is widely recognized as Afghanistan's first female graffiti artist. Being a graffiti artist anywhere in the world is a challenge, and that's especially true for a woman living in war-torn Kabul. Dorian Jones caught up with the 30-year-old Hassani at an international street art festival in Istanbul and has more on her story.
Shamsia Hassani working on her latest mural. As with most of her art, the women portrayed carry a message of oppression and empowerment.
She can use music and instrument to talk with people, to speak louder and make more attention, as she has no mouth, but this music and instrument gives her power to speak in society. Her eyes are closed because usually she has nothing good around herself to see, and she doesn't want to see anything around. And sometimes she cannot see her future, but it doesn't mean that she cannot see.
Hassani was born in Iran after her family fled the Afghan war. They eventually returned to Kabul so Hassani could pursue a fine art education at Kabul University, where she now teaches. The opportunity to attend the Istanbul Festival and work in a more relaxed environment gives Hassani a welcome break from the pressures of being a graffiti artist in Kabul. And it gives her the chance to share her experiences with an appreciative audience.
I think that art is art cannot change anything directly. It's very difficult to change the situation with art. Art is changing people's mind, and people's mind will change the society.
Hassani has already built up an impressive number of works, even in the face of violence and extreme challenges women artists face.
I really am scared of public spaces. I really scare from explosions happening all the time. And I feel usually very hopeless because there are a lot of bad things happening around me and I cannot change anything. And specifically, it's difficult for women to do graffiti and street art because usually people are not happy with women's activity. I usually work in Kabul, but usually in a small walls, not in big walls, because I cannot finish them. I need to just run away as soon as I can. So that's why I start in small walls.
At the festival, Hassani has a rare opportunity to spend a few days on her work, a luxury she says she never gets back home. Despite the dangers, Hassani says she will continue to bring color and hope to the people of Kabul. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
This news alert from VOA Asia, an active storm track will bring several opportunities for rain and mountain snow to parts of China and Japan during the winter of 2018-19. The pattern will produce rounds of rain and mountain snow from the coasts of the Mediterranean and Black Seas to the Himalayas. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA. This is VOA Asia. Less than a week before crucial midterm elections that could shift the balance of power in Washington, U.S. President Donald Trump is making a campaign blitz on behalf of members of his party, holding 11 rallies in 8 states. But will it be enough to help the Republicans? On this week's TV program Plugged In, VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren examines the mood and the political divisions in the United States and what is motivating voters to head to the polls. Jesu Semin Oni has more.
With just days to go before the U.S. midterm elections, GOP members are getting a major boost from the top. U.S. President Donald Trump is hitting the campaign trail to provide last-minute support for Republican candidates in key Senate races.
They won't give us any votes on border security.
While President Trump himself is not on the ballot, Matt Schlapp, chairman of the American Conservative Union, says the president is a driving force for some heading to the polls this November.
It can't help but be a referendum on the president because he looms so large over our politics. He dominates every news cycle. So he's not going to be the major player in each and every race. But overall, at the end of the night, there's no question that the voters are in some ways saying what they think about Donald Trump.
Some critics of President Trump have blamed his heated rhetoric for fostering hostility and anger in some sectors. That in the aftermath of a violent week where 11 worshipers were gunned down in a synagogue in Pittsburgh and a Florida man was arrested for mailing bombs to 13 prominent Democrats and a cable news outlet. VOA senior correspondent Jim Malone.
The question we don't know is what this atmosphere in the country the last several days, how this will impact the election. One thing it has done, it's taken the focus off the issues in the sense the president wanted to focus on, which was immigration and the caravan. He is going to try to get back to that now very quickly.
The Democrats are also trying to sway the conversation, placing greater emphasis on the issue of health care.
The president is trying to make a lot of noise. I think the public cares about what's happening on issues that directly affect them. Right now, I think the health care issue is very important for Democrats because Republicans have tried to repeal Obamacare, including eliminating the protection for people with pre-existing conditions.
Political watchers say preserving a Republican-run Senate is President Donald Trump's best hope. Democrats, based on analysis of public polling, appear likely to win back the House when Americans head to the polls on Tuesday. Jesu Semeoni, VOA News, Washington.
This news alert from VOA Asia, minimum wages in Southeast Asia are rising sharply as governments strive to please their publics. However, that trend could slow foreign investment as the region loses its edge as a low-cost production hub. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. The United States Congress has a big question for the National Academy of Sciences. It wants to know, are we alone in the universe, or are there other planets like ours with intelligent life out there? NASA has been working with scientists across the country to try and answer that question. Erica Celeste caught up with one of them at the University of Notre Dame.
The Hubble telescope has given us spectacular pictures from space, but they're not detailed enough to help us in our search for life in the trillions of galaxies across the universe.
If tens of percent of stars have planets that could resemble the Earth and could potentially have life, then the implications are that there are billions of them just within our Milky Way galaxy.
As a member of the NAS Committee on Exoplanet Science Strategy, Justin Krepp is focused on how and what the United States will explore in space over the next decade. In September, the committee released a report detailing several recommendations to do just that. First, it encourages NASA to develop and launch a space-based mission specifically to image and characterize Earth-like planets around the stars. But that's not easy.
If you try to image a planet, you run into several difficulties straight away. One is that their separation is very small on the sky, so you need a certain size telescope to do that. The problem is that Earth's atmosphere blurs out the images, and so it exacerbates that problem.
The committee believes the NASA mission, collecting data from above the Earth's atmosphere and more powerful equipment, could resolve that issue, which leads to the second recommendation, building two large ground-based telescopes that will produce images 10 times sharper than that from those of the Hubble Space Telescope. The highly sophisticated equipment will also help scientists with another recommendation, completing the partially funded Wide Field Infrared Survey Telescope. When launched into space, it will not only search for planets hundreds of light years away, it'll gather information on what they're made of and if they could support life. That, Krepp says, could answer an age-old question.
Are we alone? This is a question that impacts not only science, but theology and philosophy and other areas. And so it's a curiosity. It's part of being human. Is our world special? Is it isolated? Or are there other planets out there that could have life? Can we communicate with them?
Other recommendations to start to answer those questions include building state-of-the-art equipment, developing a network for teams around the world to collaborate, and creating an investor program to fund it all. The report will be reviewed by the U.S. Congress and used in the federal plan to search for new planets and extraterrestrial life over the next decade. For VOA News, I'm Erica Celeste in Notre Dame, Indiana.
Finally, governments around the world are increasing control over use of the internet and social media. That according to the latest report by Freedom House. In 2017, officials in many countries accused dissidents of spreading fake news as a pretext to silence them. Online propaganda and uncontrolled harvesting of personal data have permeated the internet in the past year. A Freedom House expert told VOA these trends are a major threat to democracy. Zlatica Hoc has the story.
Online content manipulation contributed to a seventh consecutive year of overall decline in internet freedom, says the Freedom House report for 2017. China was the world's worst abuser of internet freedom for the third consecutive year. Citizens of Iceland and Estonia enjoy the most internet freedom. Turkey is one of the countries that have seen a steep decline in internet freedom following the 2016 failed coup against President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Internet use is strictly censored.
And we've seen in the past few years how a refusal to abide by Turkish court orders to remove certain content has resulted in these platforms being blocked.
The report also says manipulation and disinformation tactics played an important role in elections in 18 countries last year. In the United States, proliferation of fake news peaked ahead of the 2016 presidential election and continues to be a concern.
Unfortunately, this year really underlined the notion that the internet can disrupt democracies as much as it can destabilize dictatorships.
Freedom House is calling for the support of independent journalists who can help investigate how social media are being weaponized to silence legitimate reporting.
We've seen some really great efforts in places like the United States in order to identify who is behind disinformation campaigns around electoral interference or to smear certain journalists.
The Russian government has been named as one of the top purveyors of fake news in an attempt to influence political developments abroad and to maintain hold on power at home. Zlatica Hoc, VOA News, Washington.
And that's VOA Asia for today and this week. Thanks so much for being with us. We hope to see you again on Monday. And until then, have a great weekend.